Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today I'm talking to Jason L. Riley of the Wall Street Journal Editorial Board and the author of Let Them In, The Case for Open Borders, Six Common Arguments Against Immigration and Why They Are Wrong. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Jason, give us a preview of your book. What's the thesis?
Well, The Case for Open Borders, which is the subtitle of the book, is the case essentially for letting the free market determine how much foreign labor we need in this country. Right now, that determination is made by politicians and public policymakers who basically set arbitrary quotas, so many from this country, so many from that country. And like most efforts in Soviet-style central planning, it's been a complete disaster. We have thriving markets in human smuggling in this country, thriving markets in document fraud. We have dead bodies strewn in the Arizona desert. And of course, we have 12 million plus illegal immigrants in the country. I think our public policymakers would do better to let the law of supply and demand determine the level of immigration. And I think this will do a couple things. First of all, it will reduce illegal immigration, which of course is the goal here. Give people more legal ways to come, and fewer will come illegally. These are economic migrants coming in search of work. We have the jobs, they need the work. Let's let them do those jobs. Let's give them legal ways to enter the country. And the second thing it will do, and maybe even more importantly, is I think it will make us a safer country from a homeland security standpoint, because it will free up our border patrol to focus on real threats, to focus on potential terrorists, to focus on drug dealers and the like. Right now, they're stretched very thin because they're chasing down people coming here to burp our babies and change linen in hotels and chop off chicken heads in meatpacking plants. I mean, Homeland Security is raiding meatpacking plants in Iowa, where the unemployment rate is 3.5%. How many Al-Qaeda cells have we uncovered there? It's, I think, a very inefficient use of our Homeland Security resources. If we gave people more legal ways to come, it would reduce the haystack and allow our Homeland Security to focus on people coming here to do us harm.
So what does that mean? There should be no limits on the number of people who, as long as they come and present some kind of identification at a border, and they don't have a criminal record, or maybe they do, or they meet certain health requirements?
I think health requirements, background checks are important, but I think it should be a market-based system. We had something in place approximating what I have in mind in the 1940s and 50s. It was called the Bracero Program, and it was in response to a reduction in farm laborers, a shortage of farm laborers after World War II. And we put this in place. Farm workers, our growers, had to establish that they couldn't find labor domestically. Once they met that requirement, they were able to receive workers from Mexico. And what this did was reduce illegal immigration to a trickle in the late 50s and early 60s. Now, there are all kinds of problems with this program in terms of worker exploitation. I wouldn't advocate resurrecting it in its exact form. We would have to tinker with it. But the principle behind the program, I think, is a sound one, which is that if you give people more legal ways to come, it will reduce illegal immigration.
Do you worry at all about creating a two-tier citizenship system where a guest worker would not have the same full rights as a legal resident?
I do, and that's why I would not be in favor of a guest worker program that did not give people the option of a pathway to citizenship if that's what they want. Now, I don't think everyone will want that. I mean, there's a temptation here to exaggerate the permanence of immigration from Mexico and to assume that everyone will want to come and stay forever. That's not been the history of immigration in this country.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
If you listen to the commentators on talk radio and cable news, you'd think that Mexicans invented temporary migration or return migration. This is simply untrue. It's been around for a long time. Between 1880 and 1930, 5 million Italians came to this country. 2 million went back. In the years leading up to World War I, somewhere around 60% of the European immigrants in this country returned home. Temporary migration is something that's been around for a long time. It's happened not only to this country, but to other countries. It's just immigrants taking their human capital and putting it to use where they can get a better return on it. Sometimes they want to stay forever, sometimes they don't. One great example of this is of what might happen. Because when I make the case for open borders, people say, Mexico will empty out.
Right.
Well, one counterexample that you can give is Puerto Rico. In the 1940s and 50s, it looked like Puerto Rico was going to empty out into New York City. Puerto Ricans were already U.S. citizens. Flights from San Juan to New York were cheap and quick, and they were coming in large numbers. But somewhere around 1961, net migration from Puerto Rico petered out to zero, where it has remained ever since. Why hasn't Puerto Rico emptied out? Well, right around 1961, per capita income in Puerto Rico reached about a third, about 35% of what it is in the U.S. And apparently, that was enough for a lot of Puerto Ricans to feel happy with their standard of living in Puerto Rico and stay. Now, I don't know what the tipping point will be for Mexico, but we do know that Mexico won't have to reach parity, economic parity, with the U.S. in order for Mexicans to stop coming north in search of work. In fact, we've probably already reached the high water mark in terms of illegal immigration from Mexico. It's down by half since 2000. And we also, if you look at the demographic trends in Mexico, the cohort that goes north, the young men, it's down because birth rates are down dramatically. In fact, according to UN projections, they will have a negative birth rate in Mexico within the next 50 years.
To put it bluntly, I agree with your general ideas. The open border policy, certainly Reason Magazine has always written in favor of these types of things. And, you know, and even not just from a free market perspective, but from an individual rights perspective to move and to work where you want to. There is zero political will for this. Why is this so unpopular?
I think the debate in Washington last year got stuck on what to do with the 12 million plus illegals already in the country. Folks says if you do anything short of deporting them, it's amnesty and this conversation is over. And that's where we got stuck. I think it was a mistake to let that issue stall debate. That is a self-correcting problem over time if we get the other stuff right. Those 12 million will age and pass away over time. Our focus should be not adding to that population. And if we give people more legal ways to come, we won't be adding to the illegal population already in the U.S. So even if we can't figure out what to do with them, some people want to find them, make them pass background checks, jump through some hoops to stay. I don't have a problem with that. They broke the law to come here. I think that law should be reformed rather than enforced, but they did break the law. And I can understand people's frustration with that. This is a nation of laws. So if you want to make them jump through some hoops to legalize their status, I don't have a problem with that. I don't think the public has the stomach for doing what it would take to forcibly deport 12 million people, so I don't think that's going to happen. But in any case, if we can't figure out what to do with them, don't do anything. I think that problem will take care of itself over time if we get the other stuff right.
Ignoring problems until they go away. You know, it works for skin cancer, and I think it'll work for immigration. Who is worse on immigration, Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, or how does this shake out?
I don't really see it that way. I mean, one of the reasons I wrote this book, however, was to take conservatives to task for abandoning their principles, their free market principles on this issue. I mean, folks like no self-respecting free market advocate would ever argue in favor of restrictions on the movement of goods and services across international borders.
Unless it's cocaine.
Well, you guys wouldn't even advocate for that.
We'll see who we're interviewing next.
But conservatives want to put restrictions on the movement of the people who produce those goods and services. I think there's an inconsistency here. And instead of looking to folks they normally do, like Adam Smith and John Stuart Mill and David Ricardo and so forth, suddenly those guys get tossed overboard when the subject turns to immigration. And they start looking to Lou Dobbs and Pat Buchanan. And it becomes a sort of reactionary populism instead of a principled free market advocacy. And I take a lot of conservatives to task for that.
Name them. Who are the conservatives who you think are contravening their own ideological principles to be restrictive?
Well, a lot of them are in talk radio and on cable news. You have folks like Bill O'Reilly. You have folks in talk radio, from Rush Limbaugh to Sean Hannity to Laura Ingram. Basically, the whole the political right in this country, the majority of the political right in this country, I think, has handled this issue very poorly.
What motivates them? Why are they contradicting themselves on immigration?
Well, different folks bring different issues to the table, which is why I broke them down into six basic arguments in the book. But, for instance, your social conservatives use this argument. They say that we're not assimilating the folks that are coming today.
And when we talk about the folks who are coming, primarily we're
Mexicans,
talking about Mexicans.
Yeah. And we're talking about Mexicans because they're really half of the folks coming. So they tend to suck up all the oxygen in this debate,
and
rightly so, I think.
And they speak a different language.
And they speak a different language, and many are coming illegally. So I think that's why they justifiably suck up so much oxygen in this debate. But in any case, the argument made on the social right, and folks like it, National Review, you get that, this is where this argument goes a lot, at the Manhattan Institute, a conservative think tank in New York, you get folks there arguing this. And it is that we're not assimilating the Mexicans the way we assimilated the Europeans and the Asians of old. Moreover, they say, we're incapable of doing that, because the multiculturalist left has changed the debate in this country. They don't want people to assimilate. Sam Huntington wrote a whole book about this, the Academy's resistance to Americanization and assimilation. For various reasons, they want us broken down into ethnic groups, they have bilingual education advocacy and all the rest of it. And so these folks on the right say, because that is the state of play here, we have to seal the border. I say they're targeting the wrong folks. I mean, they're right to resist, you know, ethnically gerrymandered voting districts and La Raza's big government agenda and bilingual education advocacy and anti-American Chicano studies professors and all that. But don't blame the immigrants for those folks. Don't blame the woman changing your linen at Hilton. Don't blame the guy building homes in your neighborhood. Keep the immigrants. Deport the Columbia faculty is my attitude. So I take them to task. Furthermore, I think they're wrong on the facts. These folks are assimilating.
What are the quick indicators of assimilation?
The indicators of assimilation are English language skills, home ownership rates, those sorts of things, income levels, and the like. And what you see when you measure properly is that not only is assimilation taking place, but upward mobility is taking place. We tend to see in the media a lot of averages. What is the average English language skill of a Latino? What is the average high school dropout rate of the Latino, and so forth? Averages don't tell you a lot about assimilation, because assimilation is really a function of how long you've been in the country. We want to know if the person who's been here 30 years speaks English better than the person who's been here 5 years. An average, which is averaging in 100,000 people got here yesterday with people who've been here 20 years, doesn't tell you that. So only a longitudinal study tells you that. And when you look at longitudinal studies that follow the same folks over a period of time, you see assimilation taking place.
What else motivates the restrictionists? I mean, part are fears about assimilation. What are the other fears that play in?
Well, there are economic fears, the fears that immigrants are stealing jobs and depressing wages, which is based on a fallacy, which is that there's a fixed number of jobs in the U.S. and that a job that an immigrant takes means one fewer job for the folks already here. There aren't a fixed number of jobs in the U.S. In 2006, for instance, 55 million Americans either quit their jobs or were fired. 57 million were hired over the same period of time. About a third of our labor force turns over every year. That's a good thing.
And immigrants in general end up going to places that have lower than average unemployment.
They do. They do. And in fact, illegal immigrants are even better about doing that because the bureaucracy created with legal immigrants has, you know, people assigned to certain places, and usually they're behind the curve anyways, the bureaucrats are. So illegal immigrants are actually more efficient in terms of finding niches in our labor markets. But the reason immigrants aren't displacing Americans in terms of work is because of who comes. If we were importing replicas of ourselves, if we were importing clones, we'd have a problem. But that's not who comes. The average immigrant tends to be either higher educated and higher skilled than the average American, or lower educated and lower skilled than the average American. So they're filling niches. They're complementing our workforce rather than working as substitutes for the folks already here. And this makes us a more productive country. I mean, even at the low end, which is, you know, people, the whole term jobs Americans won't do is taken on this negative connotation. This is nonsense. The reason there are jobs in this country that people don't want to do is because we're increasingly overqualified for those jobs, which is a good thing. But it doesn't mean we want the job to go away. For instance, a farm worker is creating jobs in the surrounding economy, jobs that an American might typically feel, a job in sales and marketing and equipment manufacturing. That farm job goes, so does that job in the surrounding economy. So I'd rather keep that job here. Same thing at the high-end level. You have people coming in that are work as job multipliers. An engineer gets hires some Chinese, a chip manufacturing company hires a Chinese engineer to create a better chip. And if that's a successful hire, the company expands. And everything from the managers to secretaries that need to be hired to handle that expansion tend to be Americans. These are job multipliers.
So we've got assimilation, we've got economic worries. Yeah. What else motivates this?
Another argument on the right is political. And this is an argument I particularly take issue with. It's a sort of ethnic determinism that's going on. There are folks who believe Latino immigrants are natural Democrats, and that this vote is lost to the Republican Party. So why should we be importing votes for the other side?
Why are they natural Democrats?
I don't believe that they are. Okay. First of all,
why do right-wingers say that?
Well, I think part of it's ignorance, part of it's laziness, but I think the Bush showed it's untrue. In 2004, Bush won more than 40% of the Latino vote.
Which
it's was also
higher than he had gotten in 2000.
Which was double the rate Republicans won less than 10 years earlier. This is a swing vote. Mm-hmm. And Republicans should go out and work for it. They should also keep in mind that we lump together Hispanic and Latinos, but they don't all vote alike. I mean, Puerto Ricans don't vote the same way as Mexicans, who don't vote the same way as Cubans, and so forth. How much time you spend in this country has a lot to do with your voting patterns. And you have to remember how young and how many new immigrants are coming here. These votes are open to someone, to a party that wants them. And this idea that the Republican Party is better off with a sort of southern strategy for Hispanics is, I think, a big mistake. Even if you sealed the border tomorrow, even if we could snap our fingers and seal the border tomorrow, those demographic trends are not going to change. The Hispanics are the fastest growing ethnic group in the country. The Republican Party needs to deal with that, not think that they can continue to sort of coalesce the white vote or work or play to anti-immigrant sentiment, which I don't think most Americans share anyways. But I just think it's a loser. It's a political loser going forward. America is both basically a pro-immigrant country, and I think it's just bad politics.
How do you think immigration will play out in the 2008 presidential election? McCain was very heavily identified with immigration comprehensive reform, which failed Obama. Not fully clear what, I mean, he seems to have goodwill towards immigrants, but not a lot of specifics.
Yeah, I don't think either one of these guys want to go there. I think McCain's been spooked. It almost cost him the nomination, his affiliation with comprehensive immigration reform last year. I think Barack Obama has other priorities. I mean, he's going to be busy enacting universal health care and reversing the Bush tax cuts. You only have so much political capital. I think he'll want to throw it at other problems. The difficulty, the box, the corner that the Republican Party is in is that McCain probably has to win those states that Bush did in the Mountain West, your Arizonas, your Colorados, your New Mexicos, if he wants to win the presidency. Those are fast-growing Hispanic population states. And the party, the Republican Party, has put McCain in a box, and he has to hope that voters remember him and his views on immigration versus what the GOP's views have been of late, which is pretty bad.
Right. And in 2006, Arizona was particularly fascinating, a border state. They had a Republican, in a safe seat, a Republican candidate, Randy Graf, who got
trounced.
Trounced, as did J.D. Hayworth, a longtime Republican congressman from the Phoenix area, who had written a book, an anti-immigrant book.
If anti-immigration doesn't play in Arizona,
right,
it's not going to play anywhere.
Well, it plays better in Iowa, right? Or places with relatively few.
Relatively few, but in Iowa's defense, they do have a very fast-growing Hispanic population.
What? How does immigration politics play out in relation to race? There seems to be growing tension between black leaders and Latino leaders.
Historically, that's been the case. If you go back, even folks like W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington and Frederick Douglass were worried that immigrants from Europe and Asia would be displacing black workers. Even Marcus Garvey, of the black separatist, who himself was an immigrant from Jamaica, took issue with European and Asian immigrants. So there is some history there. Today, I don't think those arguments hold up, or they hold up even less than they might have held up 100 years ago. And the reason why is that if you look at black labor participation rates, it pretty much tells the story. If Hispanics were displacing black workers, When we saw high levels of immigration, we'd see high levels of black unemployment. And when we saw lower levels of Hispanic immigration, we'd see lower levels of black unemployment. That's not the case. You see consistently high black unemployment, consistently low black labor participation rates. Blacks aren't even competing for these jobs. They're not being shoved out of these jobs. And I think the reason for that has to do a lot with our education system in this country. I mean, black kids tend to attend the worst public schools we have. I mean, how well are we expecting them to perform in the labor force coming out of the public education system? I think the black leadership would do better to focus on issues like education. There's also all kinds of regulatory burdens for young black entrepreneurs who want to start a business, who want to start a jitney service, or want to start a hair braiding service, licenses, and then we have prevailing wage laws out there, which, by the way, were put in place back in the 30s in part to keep blacks out of the labor force, to keep black contractors from bidding on federal projects. These legacy regulations are defended by the black leadership today. I mean, it's amazingly ironic. But in other words, before we start blaming Jamal's employment situation on Jorge, I think we should. There are a whole bunch of other things that could be having a much greater effect on the socioeconomic progress of black Americans, and I think black leaders should do better to focus on those. And it is true that black Americans are more likely to be competing with these low-skill immigrants because of so many black low-skill workers. But it's also true that the low-skill American population, including the low-skill black American population, is shrinking, and shrinking very rapidly in this country. And I think it would be a mistake to put in place laws and regulations to protect a rapidly shrinking minority of the American workforce.
How did you get into this topic? I mean, you write most of the unsigned editorials at the Wall Street Journal,
yes,
about immigration.
Yeah.
What touched off this interest in it?
Nothing in particular. I'm not an immigrant, so I don't really have a dog in this fight in that sense.
Calling immigrants dogs?
It's a long tradition of Americans
that's one of the nicest things people historically have said.
It's just one of those things. I started writing about 7 or 8 years ago, and what really touched it off is that I kept coming across the same arguments. Yet my own research and my own reporting revealed these arguments to be way overblown when they weren't simply counterfactual. The arguments that immigrants are stealing jobs, depressing wages, filling our prisons, overpopulating the U.S., not assimilating, and so forth. And it also, I found very troubling that a lot of my fellow conservatives were buying into these arguments and abandoning their principles. And that really provided the motivation for writing the book. But there's no personal stake in it for me, other than that I want to see my country continue to thrive. Mm-hmm. And I think that immigrations are a large part of making that happen.
What do you make of, I mean, historically, and you talk about this in the book, but Benjamin Franklin was worried about Germans, particularly mm-hmm. Catholic Germans, polluting the country. The first major immigration law was the Chinese Exclusion Act in the late 19th century. The overtly racist appeals of immigration reform in the 20s.
Yeah.
And since then, I mean, there has always been a huge amount of anxiety in America, even as it has always been a country defined by immigration.
Yes.
Why is that? And does that mean that this is just kind of a chronic issue that we will always deal with but never really be able to solve in any meaningful way?
I think you're probably right. Each new wave brings the same anxieties, the same fears back. As you said, Benjamin Franklin complaining about Germans coming to Pennsylvania. They're going to Germanize us before we Anglify them. This fear that immigrants will change America more than the Americans will change the immigrants. It's always been here. It's accompanied each new wave, and I think it probably will always be with us. But the fact of the matter is that because of the history of this country, because most Americans don't have to reach back too far into their own personal history to find an immigrant, means that this
They can hate them on a personal level?
It means that this anti-immigrant sentiment, I don't think, ever settles too deeply into the American psyche. If it did, when people decide they can't live next to someone who's different, they don't send emails to the O'Reilly Factor. they engage in ethnic cleansing. You get the Balkans. You get the Hutus and Tutsis. You get the Hindus and the Muslims in India. You don't get that in America. And that's a good thing, and I think it's because we're basically a pro-immigrant country, even if our elites sometimes want to try and exploit the issue for political gain.
Jason, what are your politics? How do you define yourself politically, and how did you get there?
I would self-identify as a free market advocate, first and foremost. I'm certainly right of center politically, but mostly for economic reasons rather than for social reasons. And I would say that I got to this point by reading over the years folks like Shelby Steele and Tom Sowell and George Will. Those were sort of my pinup intellectuals growing up, and they have a lot to do with why I think the way I think today.
We've been talking today with Jason Riley of the Wall Street Journal editorial board and the author of Let Them In, The Case for Open Borders, Six Common Arguments Against Immigration and Why They Are Wrong. For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.